Hi, friends. This is Terry Squires with today's Nashville This Is Faith. I sat down with Gary Sinise, Lieutenant Dan. You don't want to miss his episode. There is always someone around you in need of encouragement, your smile and your words of hope. You know him as Lieutenant Dan in the movie Forrest Gump, Gary Sinise. His stage, film, and television career has spanned more than four decades, earning him numerous awards and nominations like the Emmys, Golden Globes, Oscars, and many more. And you can find his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. In the midst of his career, Gary has stood as an advocate on behalf of America's service members, earning awards to name a few: the Bob Hope Award, the Congressional Medal of Honor Society's Patriot Award, and the Presidential Citizens Medal. But it hasn't always been easy for him, facing trials and heartbreak. Today, he shares his passion through the Gary Sinise Foundation, changing the lives of our veterans. This is his story. This is today's Nashville. This is Faith. Gary Sinise, you are so loved around the world for your movies, your character, Lieutenant Dan, and what you do for our veterans. Thank you so much for inviting me to the Gary Sinise Foundation. I am so honored and blessed to sit down with you.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to have you here.
You have been so busy. I read your best-selling book, and I want my friends to know everything about you. Let's start from the very beginning. You grew up in Chicago?
Yeah. Born on the south side of Chicago.
And I read that actually your name is pronounced, your grandfather changed his name. Yeah. You're Italian.
Yeah.
And changed it from, how would you say it in Italian?
Sinise.
Sinise.
Yeah, so when his father, my great-grandfather came through Ellis Island, and the story goes that they looked at the spelling, and when they were checking him in through Ellis Island, and they said, "Your name's Sinise. That's how we're going to say it." And so they just flattened it out, and that's what stuck. And he wanted to be an American, so he said, "Okay, Sinise is it."
And so you came to Chicago.
There were nine kids, and five of them were born in Italy. And then great-grandfather Vito, he moved to the south side from Italy, and they had four more kids. And my grandfather was one of those, Daniel.
Okay. Well, what was it like growing up?
Some of the memories I have from the south side, in a very small little community that we were in. My parents had a very, very small house. I think they said it cost $19,000 to buy the house that I was born in and lived in as a kid. And I went to an elementary school there called Sandburg. I remember that. And one of the events that I remember very well is that's where I was when John Kennedy was shot. And I remember that day. I have pictures in my mind of that day, going to school and having them send everybody home because the president had been shot that day. That was when I was in third grade, and then fourth grade we moved from the south side to the north side of Chicago.
I read that you had quite the growing up as a teenager.
Well, When you move, so like we moved a little bit when I was a kid. So we moved when I was about, I think I was about 9 years old, started fourth grade. We moved from the South Side. I was in a little town called Harvey, Illinois. And then we moved up to Highland Park, Illinois, which is about 25 miles north of the city of Chicago. I lived there, I lived in Highland Park till I was about seventh grade or so. About midway through seventh grade, we moved out to another suburb called Glen Ellen, and I lived in Glen Ellen till I was about, till the end of my freshman year. Then we decided, my parents decided to move back to Highland Park. So I was kind of jostled around a little bit there, and by the time I got to sophomore year in high school, I was playing in bands as a kid and that kind of thing, but academically I was not doing well at all. And the moving was kind of disruptive, you know, when you take teenagers, you know, out of their environment, plop them down with a bunch of kids they don't know. Even though we moved back to Highland Park where I'd lived, a lot of the kids I knew previously, before we moved to Glen Ellen, they had moved on and I wasn't really friends with them anymore. So I remember kind of struggling to find my niche in high school, and I was playing in bands, and I just, at the end of my sophomore year, toward the end of my sophomore year, I stumbled into the theater community, the theater department kids, and ended up in a play, West Side Story, and that's how I started acting when I was 16 years old, and I just, you know, as a struggling kid, having a lot of trouble in school, but when I hit the acting thing and found this play group and started performing on stage, I just fell in love with it. That's all I wanted to do. And I was struggling academically, I was not doing well at all, but all of a sudden I was taking the theater classes and I was getting great grades in all the theater classes I was taking. So I just found this thing that I was doing. So I was playing music as a kid and I was acting in plays and I finally made it through high school.
Well, I love your story and we're gonna talk about her when we come back, Mrs. Patterson, and how one person took a hold of you and turned your life around and said that, you know, you had something special. And we're going to talk about it when we come back. Gary, I love when you tell the story about the teacher, Mrs. Patterson. You were struggling. She took a hold of you and she said, you know what, you have something special. Tell me about her.
Yeah, that was a life-changing moment, really. As I said, I was playing in bands in school and I was struggling as a kid and not doing well academically. And I mean, really poorly academically. And I was having trouble adjusting and finding my thing. All I wanted to do was play music. And I was failing a lot of classes and just not doing well at all. And I think I was actually skipping a class and just hanging out in this hallway one day, kind of later in the sophomore year, probably spring of sophomore year, and hanging out with my band members in the hallway. And I remember this little lady walking down the hall and just turning around and saying, I'm directing West Side Story. I'm the theater teacher, you know, I think. And I'm directing West Side Story and you look perfect for the gang members. Come and audition for the play. And then she blew off down the hall and we just looked at each other and laughed, you know, nobody really took it seriously. But I thought, I'm gonna go check this out. So after school was the audition and I went and I saw all these pretty girls going in there into the audition. So I followed them in and I didn't know what to do. You know, I had no idea what an audition was or anything like that, but they handed me a script and said, read this part, and told me to get up there. And so I'm like stumbling through. And I really wasn't taking it seriously at all. I was just goofing off. And I thought, and the kids were laughing at me. So I just goofed off a little more, and then they laughed a little more. And I thought, well, this is fun. And I looked up at one point, and the teacher was laughing. She was kind of getting a kick out of it. And so the following morning, you know, I don't know, were you ever in a play in school?
No.
So you audition for the play, and then everybody shows up to see if you're on the list and if you got cast. The cast list is posted on the board, and everybody's crowding around. And I remember getting there, and there was a big crowd around, everybody looking to see if they'd made it. And I looked for my name, and there was my name to play this little part in West Side Story. So I got in the play. She gave me a little part. And I just fell in love with acting and fell in love. She was wonderful. She was unlike any teacher I ever knew because she really talked to the kids like they could really have a good time. And she was funny. And she was also an actress. So she was performing, you know, constantly for the kids. And it was fun. It was unlike any teacher I ever had. And I just loved her. And I loved being in the play. I remember closing night for the play. I just burst into tears. I was so sad. It was over. But then the following year, I went back, and the first play that they were going to do, I went and tried to get in it. Ended up not getting in the play, but I raised my hand and volunteered to be on the stage crew. And then the next play I auditioned for, I got a big part in it. And then I got another big part, and then I got another big part. And it just took off from there. I became one of the top theater kids for the rest of my schooling. And when it came to, this was 1973 when I was supposed to graduate. I had done a ton of plays. And in fact, as I mentioned, so many of my classes I wasn't doing well in, but the teachers actually would see that they would come and see me in these plays, and they could see that I was like on fire on stage and doing really great. So they would find ways to grade me for what I was doing in the theater department to give me a better grade in their social studies class or whatever. They would tell me to talk about the play, and then I would, and they'd give me a grade for it. So they were really trying to help me because they saw that this failing kid was now excelling in something really positive. But when it came to time to graduate, because I had been so bad with so many of my classes, I didn't have enough credits to graduate. So I had to go back for an extra semester. So my class graduated, they all went off to college, they did their thing, and I had to go back to high school. So I felt, even though I knew kids from the theater department that were in the class that was coming up that I was now going to be a part of, still I felt kind of like a bit of a failure. But the first play that came up, I auditioned for it, I got a big part in it, and it made that extra semester worth going back for, because it was a really good show, and I got a really good, you know, got a lot out of it. And that sent me on my way into the acting world.
Now, were you a believer at this time? Were you church-going family? Or
No. No, I was baptized in a little Christian church when I was, you know, little, on the South Side. But then my parents really stopped going to church. My grandfather and grandmother, my grandfather was very Italian. He was 100% Italian. And he married my grandmother, who was not Italian. He was Catholic. She was Methodist or something like that. And so they really, I don't know, their parents were mad at him and something. And they stopped going. So my mom and dad, you know, really didn't bring me up with anything. I remember going to Sunday school a little bit as a kid, but no, it was later in life that I found my faith, and all the way through high school and all of that, there was nothing.
Well, you made some really sweet friends in high school that took you from the high school, and then you started something incredible. When I read it, I thought, oh, I can't believe he started that. After you graduated, what happened?
So going to college, I thought about trying to get into a theater school, but then I just the idea of going to college wasn't appealing to me. So I started a little theater company right out of high school, and we called it Steppenwolf Theater. And I got together with some of the kids that were still in high school, and we found a space, and we started doing plays
and
in there.
Was it in a church you started?
Well, originally it was in this little Unitarian church that my parents knew the architect who had designed the church. And I said, do you think they'd let us use that to put on a play? And they gave us a key and said, go ahead. So we'd go in there at night and rehearse our play, and we did our first play in the Unitarian Church 50 years ago in 1974.
And it's still going, isn't it?
Steppenwolf is now it's a Chicago institution. It's a gigantic multi-theater complex on the north side of Chicago. It started with little kids, no money, nothing, and it's an institution now, very well regarded all around the world. A lot of great actors have come out of there over the years.
Take me back to those days when you were just starting and some of the stories that happened there.
I go all the way back to the beginning. You know, like I said, I didn't want to go to college, but I wanted to keep doing the plays. And I loved the kids that I was doing plays with and everything. We just found a space. We found this Unitarian church. We picked a play and we went in there and started doing it. Then we did another one. Remember the musical Grease?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was the second one. And I directed it. I was in it. And I produced it with about $1,000 of money that I had earned working for my dad. And then we did another play in there. And then we found, that was 74. And then in 76, my buddies who had kind of worked with me, they had gone off to college at Illinois State University. And that's where they met John Malkovich and Laurie Metcalf and Joan Allen, all these great people. And so we put a small theater company together. It was still called Steppenwolf. And I found an empty basement of a closed down Catholic school that was perfect to build a small theater in. So in the summer of 1976, they finished college. They came up from Illinois State. It was downstate. They came up to Highland Park, and we went into the basement of the Catholic school, and we started doing plays in there in 1976. And not for any money. Nobody got paid anything. We were all working other jobs. We'd just do our theater at night, go work our day jobs, then do the theater at night. And if you go to Chicago now and you see that, and you see the gigantic complex, the seeds were planted years ago by a bunch of kids. And it really is a great American, just the great American dream story of starting with a passionate idea, working hard, and building it into something special.
It has to make you feel just amazing when you see it, that, you know, you started it and now look at it today.
Yeah, it's something. I mean, a lot of people have come and gone throughout the years. You know, it's 50 years that it's been around now. So we've had different boards of directors come and go, and the boards have been really, you know, a big, big part of it, because they helped us raise the money to build the buildings and do all the different things while the artists were working their magic on stage.
Now, how did that take you from Chicago? We're going to talk about it in a minute. Take you to Hollywood, because it's a fascinating story, and we're going to talk about it when we come back. Gary, from Steppenwolf to Hollywood, how did that all happen?
An interesting story. I mean, we started doing plays in the basement, and we were kind of isolated in this Catholic school basement in the suburb of Highland Park, 25 miles north of Chicago. But we started getting reviewed by Chicago critics who started hearing about these kids up in this basement doing this rock and roll theater. It was great. So Chicago critics would start driving from Chicago all the way up to this basement to see what was going on with these theater kids. And we were doing a lot of great stuff in there. And we eventually we moved into the city of Chicago. And that's where we started doing some plays that we would move to New York. I remember the first play we moved to New York was called True West by Sam Shepard. John Malkovich and I were in it, and we moved it in 1982. It was the first time we went to New York with a play. Nobody in New York knew who we were, really. But it got great reviews, and it was a gigantic hit. And it was the play that really launched Malkovich's career. He went off and started doing movies after that. That was a very, very popular play. And then from that point on, we, like 1983, we took another play there. 1984, we took another play there. They were all hits. They were all big hits. 1985, I did a play called Orphans. Wonderful play. And it was a big, big hit. Did really well. And I got offered a directing deal with Columbia Pictures at that point. I said, well, you know, I'm the artistic director of Steppenwolf. I think it's time to step out and do something else. So I took the deal and moved to California and started and directed my first movie. It wasn't for Columbia, but Columbia gave me an office. They gave me an assistant, and I had a two-year deal there to direct movies. I found a script that happened to be with a small company called Cinecom, and it was a movie that was released called Miles From Home with Richard Gere, ended up being with Richard Gere. And that was the first movie I directed, shot it in 1987. It wasn't a big hit or anything, didn't do that well, but it got some people's attention. And when I was done with that, we went into another Steppenwolf production of The Grapes of Wrath. And I played Tom Joad. If you remember the movie, Henry Fonda played that part in the movie. We eventually moved it to Broadway. It won the Tony Award. It was a big, big hit. And after we closed in 1990, I was now living in Los Angeles because I moved out to Los Angeles. And I got my first real part in a movie. Which was a movie called A Midnight Clear. It was a World War II movie. And so 1991, I did my first movie, and that came out. It did pretty well as a small film. But I also had acquired the rights to make Of Mice and Men into a movie. When we were working on The Grapes of Wrath, I got very close with Elaine Steinbeck, who was John Steinbeck's widow, and she controlled the rights to all his books. And I asked her, would you give me the rights to Of Mice and Men? And she gave me the rights to Of Mice and Men, and I ended up making a movie of that. And that caught Hollywood's attention because I produced it, directed it, and was in it with John Malkovich. We had actually done the play on stage in 1980, 81. And so it was natural for me to ask John if he wanted to do it. Here it is. It came out in 1992, and things started to take off from there.
When did you get the role that everybody talks about, you know, even today?
Well, I think the producers of Forrest Gump saw Of Mice and Men, and they invited me to come in and audition for Lieutenant Dan. I did, and got lucky to get the part. We started shooting in 1993, and the movie came out in 1994, 30 years ago. 30 years ago this month, actually.
And it's still one of the favorites of all times. I've watched Apollo 13. That was a great movie, too.
Thank you.
And, of course, Ransom. That was a great one. I read that you weren't too sure about Ransom because you were the villain, but you said you had fun with it?
Yeah, yeah. Our kids were young when I read that. And, you know, my career was changing. Of Mice and Men, Forrest Gump, those things, a lot of things happened right around in there. And so the career was kind of on the, it was ascending at that point. So I started to get offered some good things. I got offered Ron Howard did Apollo 13. You know, it was great to work with Tom again, Tom Hanks. And then Ron's next movie after Apollo 13 was going to be Ransom. My kids were little, And I don't know if you know, you know, I mean, you've seen Ransom. He's a pretty bad guy in it. And I didn't like him when I read it. I didn't really want to play the part of a guy who kidnaps somebody's kids, because my kids were little.
Lieutenant Dan has touched the lives of millions of veterans. And did you have any idea that that would just touch them?
Well, when we were shooting, we were having a great time making the movie, for sure. So we knew it felt good, but you never quite know how it's all gonna end up. And in fact, you know, it was very difficult for some of us to actually know what was going on in the film, because it's all these separate little stories, right? Like, I never really worked with Sally Field. One scene, one little scene with Sally and Robin Wright. But the rest of the time, they were off doing their shooting all their scenes. We didn't really know what they were doing. So I had no clue until I saw the movie. It was very hard to kind of picture how the movie was going to end up, because I really didn't know what everybody was doing in the film. But when we saw it the first time, everybody, I've told a story about the image that I remember sitting there in the theater, just a small little theater. They wanted to show the cast and some of the people that worked on it before it premiered. And the lights came up and everybody, and Robin Wright was with Sean Penn at the time. And so they were sitting down here and they stood up and turned around and I was sitting back there and they both looked at me. I remember locking eyes with them, and they both had big smiles on their faces, because we all knew it was really good, and it was a really good movie. And then, of course, it opened about a week later, and they, you know, it was off to the races at that point. The movie did so well, and 30 years later, it's still kind of very present in people's minds.
Thank you for watching this week. Stay tuned for next week, because Gary has a lot more to share with his life story.